today on Rocking the Suburbs.
Welcome to the record store. Can I help you, sir?
Yeah, I was wondering if you had any of that long-haired bluegrass. Hey, everybody. Welcome to Rockin' the Suburbs. Happy Friday to you all if you're listening to this podcast on the day it was released. That would be November 15th, 2024. Hope everybody is doing well. One final reminder before we open our fourth can from the Bluegrass 4-Pack. Submissions for Rocktober. You heard me right. Rocktober. New music are due on November 17th. That's Sunday evening. Try to get them all in by Sunday. And then we'll make sure we line them up and roll them out for you in the week ahead. Very much looking forward to the picks from Rocktober. Always a good month for rock and roll. Hope everybody's been enjoying the Bluegrass 4-Pack. And I want to thank those who have reached out to me to say they have enjoyed it. It means a lot. It's been a lot of fun to put these together. I've been a Bluegrass fan for quite a while now. In the 1980s, when I was really starting to get into music, D.C., as we learned yesterday, had remained a hotbed of country music and bluegrass. And there was a great show called Bluegrass Country that came on the radio every day, Monday through Friday, in drive time from about 3 till 6 p.m. on the local public radio station here. And Ray Davis was the host of that show. And I was a big fan of that show. Learned a lot about the traditional bluegrass and all the other good stuff about it. Got to see some local acts that were very well known, including one we'll mention a little bit later in today's podcast. So I have really enjoyed sharing what I've learned over the years with you, and I hope you enjoy it too, whether it's just a reminder of some of the stuff you loved or a starting off point for your exploration into string band traditional bluegrass music. Either way, right now, we are going to go into our last four-pack here, and what we're going to do is talk about progressive bluegrass, and also known as newgrass. Now, when we left Flat and Scruggs last, it was the mid-60s. They were riding pretty high based on their success on television and with movie soundtracks, but Earl Scruggs's curiosity to experiment and to innovate on the banjo never really left him. And by the late 60s, he had continued to push the envelope. He cut a duet or did a duet with saxophonist King Curtis, of all things, which I think is kind of wild. He even wanted to bring in and record a Bob Dylan tune with Four Flat and Scruggs. And that was just about the last straw for Lester. Lester was increasingly dismayed by Scruggs' explorations, and the duo finally broke up in 1969 over the direction of the sound. Younger players who had been exposed to bluegrass through folk festivals like Newport, where they saw Earl Scruggs play the banjo for the first time, or from all the college campus shows that Flat and Scruggs had done, or just on TV, he became a hero to them. And his direction and hints to meld bluegrass with other styles and go beyond the boundaries of the traditional sound by either adding jazz, folk, country, or rock, or even amplifying the instruments, all those things, were fueled a little bit by the explorations of Scruggs. And I think that's a big part of the progressive bluegrass, newgrass sound that developed. While some artists had subtly stretched the boundaries of traditional bluegrass already, the Country Gentleman's 1960 album Country Songs Old and New is sometimes cited as a proto-progressive bluegrass recording. And the Dillards, those scamps from the West Coast, fused electric and acoustic instruments in a bluegrass style in the mid-60s. But it wasn't until the early 1970s that the first strains of fusion of old and new took place in a style we can call progressive bluegrass. Tom Paley and Joe Lockard formed the New Deal String Band in the UK around this time, and that is said to have inspired some of the progressive players, including one Sam Rush, who is a key figure in the progressive bluegrass movement. Rush, who grew up watching the Flat and Scruggs TV show and attended the Fincastle Bluegrass Festival we learned about yesterday in 1965, was living in Louisville, Kentucky in 1971, and he formed a group called the Bluegrass Alliance with Courtney Johnson, who sang and played banjo. After a few lineup permutations, Bush and Johnson were joined by Curtis Birch, dobro guitar and vocals, and Ebo Walker on bass, and took the name Newgrass Revival. With their long hair and hippie-ish look, they bore no resemblance to traditional bluegrass bands, and their attitude toward playing came from rock and roll, often stretching songs past the seven-minute mark, and often being fueled by some of the maybe other kind of grass you might be able to smoke in Kentucky. Their 1972 debut album, released on the country label Star Day, is a landmark progressive bluegrass recording. Listening back to these songs today, they may not sound particularly radical, but they were in 1973, so much that Birch says this about the band. Our reason for doing the newer type music, he says, wasn't pretentious or irreverent or sarcastic or disrespectful. We just felt like people were ready to see that you could really expand the sound using those same instruments.
Won't you try and judge me only by my time and changes, not mistaking words for I say many. Listen only to my song and watch my eyes, not much time to spare, there's hardly any. How the lovely long-haired children living out in the streets, they're lucky, not afraid to touch each other. They're not afraid to be themselves but someone else. They choose the friends for love and not by color. Never treat a brother like a passing stranger. Always try to keep the love light burning. Listen only to his song and watch his eyes, or it might be the Prince of Peace returning. Yes, it might be the Prince of Peace returning. And the businessmen in sales collecting pennies. Judge the wealth by coins that they give away, not the ones who keep themselves spending. Never be impatient with the one you love. It might be yourself that you're burning. Won't you listen only to their song and watch their eyes, or they might just be the...
All right, and that was Newgrass Revival from their debut album, doing Leon Russell's Prince of Peace. He actually did some work touring behind Leon Russell and working with him, and really fought outside of the lines. Their long hair and their look certainly irked the traditionalists. Bill Monroe was known to have cast a few snide remarks their way at times, and certainly wouldn't be caught playing with any of those guys. In 1981, Johnson and Birch left the band, and Bush and Cowan continued the group, replacing them with virtuoso banjoist Bella Fleck and guitarist Pat Flynn. Fleck's compositions, such as Metric Lips, 7x7, and Bigfoot, were well received, as were Flynn's Do What You Gotta Do, Lonely Rider, and On the Boulevard. Flynn also brought strong lead and harmony vocals to the group, as well as a distinctive guitar style. This second incarnation of the group is also influential, inspiring much of the bluegrass slash country slash folk fusion music produced in the 80s and 90s. Let's take a listen now to 7x7 from Newgrass Revival. Thank you. Another early exponent and a key one of the Newgrass sound was J.D. Crow. A banjo picker, Crow got his traditional bluegrass schooling by playing with Jimmy Martin's Sunny Mountain Boys from the mid-50s to the early 60s. He founded his own group, the Kentucky Mountain Boys, which eventually morphed into the New South. In 1973, they recorded Bluegrass Evolution, credited to J.D. Crow and the New South, though the record wasn't released until 1977. Here's what AllMusic had to say about that album. Quote, Crow and company spearheaded the fusion of traditional bluegrass elements with such electric country instruments as the steel guitar, piano, and drums. This was certainly not viewed as a scandalous approach later on, except in fiercely traditional bluegrass circles, but consider that Bluegrass Evolution is no less pioneering an effort than the Byrds' Sweetheart of the Rodeo. Despite the pioneering bent, Tony and Larry Rice give remarkably tight and traditionally minded vocal performances, end quote. The group's second album, simply titled J.D. Crow and the New South, featured new member Ricky Skaggs, and it continued the bluegrass revolution slash evolution. Let's hear them doing Rock, Salt, and Nails from their second LP, 1975.
On the banks of the river, where the willows hang down, and the wild birds all warble with a low morning sound. Down in the hollow, where the waters run cold, it was there I first listened to the lies that you told. Now I lie on my bed and I see your sweet face. The past I remember, time cannot erase. Letter you wrote me, it was written in shame, and I know that your conscience still echoes my name. Now the nights are so long, Lord, sorrow runs deep.
Other acts who had an impact on the progressive bluegrass sound include Boone Creek, which also featured Ricky Skaggs on mandolin and fiddle, and Jerry Douglas on the dobro. They released two key albums in the late 1970s. The Country Gazette, when members of the country rock ensemble Dillard and Clark went their separate ways in 1971, bluegrass fiddler Brian Berline and guitarist-slash-bass player Roger Bush formed the Country Gazette, and they released their debut in 1972. John Hartford, another key figure, a fiddle and banjo player who recorded two influential albums in his mid-career, titled Aeroplane in 1971 and Morning Bugle in 1972. Sam Bush said, without Aeroplane and the Aeroplane Band, there would be no Newgrass music.
Down in the city, it's a pity what's there. Oh, the kids in the gutter running really bare. How much of money do I have to get? They're getting me set where the jet set gets. Like up on the hill where they do the boogie. I wonder what they're doing when they do the boogie, and I wonder what I'm doing here. Down in the city, if you ain't dead, you better watch that man, he's gonna bust your head, throw you over and leave you alone. He's a 20 minutes late, he gotta be back home, way up on the hill where they do the boogie. Boogie, I wonder what they're doing when they do the boogie, and I wonder what I'm doing here. The rats in the alley and a roach on the floor. A businessman a-hunting for a two-bit whore. I thought I heard some housewives say I gotta go up the hill for the PTA. Meets up on the hill where they do the boogie. I wonder what they're doing when they do the boogie, and I wonder what I'm doing here. Now some folks say that a hippie won't steal, but I caught three in my cornfield. One had a flag and the other had a bomb, and the third old boy was getting on home way up on the hill where they do the boogie. The boogie.
I wonder what they're doing when they do the boogie. Selection there from that album, Aeroplane, actually spelled Aeroplain. A little bit of a twist on what might traditionally be another way to spell it. That's fitting, I think. Another group, and I have a personal connection slightly, with the Seldom Scene from Washington, D.C. They played a regular Thursday night at the Birchmere in Alexandria for many, many, many years. And seeing them a couple times certainly taught me a thing or two about what a bluegrass band could do on stage, especially seeing them in a cool, intimate environment like the Birchmere there in Alexandria, one of America's great traditional music venues. So very lucky to have done that. And finally, Old and in the Way, a short-lived but very influential bluegrass group formed in 1973. It consisted of Peter Rowan, Vassar Clements, Jerry Garcia, that's right, that Jerry Garcia, and David Grisman and John Kahn on string bass. I think they put out one record that sold very, very well, and only played about 40 or 50 shows total in their lifetime, but they were definitely very influential. Grisman himself did a thing he called dog music, D-A-W-G, and that also had certainly had its place in the progressive bluegrass scene. Two key festivals that I want to talk very briefly about that supported this progressive bluegrass scene and style, one being the Telluride Bluegrass Festival. Held near a ski resort in Colorado, this festival has long supported both bluegrass and those who experiment with the form. Begun in 1974, it has grown into a much-loved summer tradition. One interesting feature of this festival, besides all the bluegrass, newgrass, and progressive grass, are a band contest, which in which 12 bands are given slots in a competition. Judges rate the bands, and the top four go to the main stage to compete before the crowd. Past winners include the Dixie Chicks, a.k.a. the Chicks, yeah, them, and Front Country. The other fest that I think is very important is Merle Fest, an annual quote-unquote traditional plus music festival held in Wilkesboro, North Carolina, on the campus of Wilkes Community College. The festival, which is held in the last weekend of April traditionally, was hosted by Grammy Award winner Doc Watson prior to his death and is named in memory and honor of his son, Eddie Merle Watson, who tragically passed in a farm tractor accident in 1985. Begun in 1988, the music is spread across 13 different stages in 4 days, which provides visitors with a wide variety to choose from. Man, you ain't kidding. And I bet the jams in the parking lot at Merlefest and the campground are something else, too. There's a mix of traditional and contemporary roots music, a blend that Doc himself called Traditional Plus. So you got a little bit of bluegrass, acoustic blues, folk, old-time, Cajun, jazz, country, Celtic Americana, rock and singer-songwriter, which is a lot. Throw it all in the blender and it comes out as Merlefest. Also want to mention, too, by the late 80s, things had, you know, definitely evolved. But Alison Krauss, when she joined the band Union Station in 1989, marked another turning point, a landmark turning point. She has become a major star, but the band she had originally with Union Station was her on lead vocals, fiddle and piano, Larry Atamunik on drums and percussion, Barry Bales on bass, Ron Block on guitar and banjo, Jerry Douglas, there he is again on dobro, and Dan Taminski on guitar and mandolin. They went on to make some really incredible music, and all the Alison Krauss and Union Station stuff, the first four or five they did, were really amazing. Her work with the group, you know, catapulted her into a superstar status, and she's gone on to collect bags full of awards and make all kinds of cool collaboration music. So she really became a huge star from the base of a progressive bluegrass start. Along those lines, Nickel Creek, the Punch Brothers, and of course, groups like Mumford & Sons, Avett Brothers, and etc. take some inspiration from bands that broke off from the strict bluegrass path, as do very current and popular acts like Billy Strings. So the line runs all the way back from early 1970s and Newgrass Revival, and runs all the way up to somebody like Billy Strings and continues to branch out to this day, which is a great, healthy, and beautiful thing about music. Bluegrass, not an exception. I also want to thank, before we close, Harris King for flagging up a great song that we'll hear a little bit of as we go out that gives a perspective on the progressive bluegrass movement. It's called Long Hair Bluegrass by Robbie Foulkes, and he recently put out an album called Bluegrass Vacation that's just wonderful. So we'll hear a little bit of that. It kind of tells the story a little bit of how he got into this type of music as a little kid. All right, folks, I hope you enjoyed the Bluegrass 4-Pack. There are still tons of unexplored topics and artists within traditional string band music that we could work on. So I'll keep my ear to the ground and keep ideas for new episodes percolating up there in my brain. With that, I want to thank everybody for listening. I want to thank Jim Linehan for being my good friend, co-host. And I want to thank you, the listener, for everything you do. We will put together the new music episodes and we'll get those rolling out for you next week. And we will talk to you guys later.
Well, Daddy packed a van full of camping gear. Mama filled the ice chest up with beer and I rode shotgun all the way up Route 15. Seemed every pecker in the USA had landed in a Culpeper field that day. 50 years gone, I'm still grooving on that scene. And there was old men doing the buck and wing, young gals skinny dipping in the spring, while the singing and the fiddling and the feedback filled the air. While Mom and Daddy were getting fried, I was sitting there with my eyeballs wide, scuffing straight at me off of the stage, just like a demon with a hypno ray, stealing my mind away. It was that long hair bluegrass, setting my young spirit. Just a dumb old kid. Those hippies knew Bob Marley note for note, and they didn't shove religion down your throat. And I was pretty sure they smoked dope like I did. There to bend police and pepper spray, if a few old timers had had their way, old Dr. Al Stanley looked a little unamused. All but anyone with ears could not deny on the guitar, Tony on the five. There was something in the air for sure. It wasn't all peace and make love, not war. No, it was something more.
Acoustic, blues, folk, old time, Cajun, jazz, country, Celtic, Americana, rock and singer-songwriter.